Lake Effect Weekend continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks for joining us. In visual art, a diptych or a triptych is a work made of two or three panels, respectively, that are painted or carved to create a cohesive piece. These forms can also be used in writing. Take, for example, Milwaukee author and poet Robert Vaughn's piece, Three for Carol. It's a three-part poem.
I really don't know clouds at all. When the conversation evaporates, perhaps it's like the clouds vanishing before the dominance of the sun. When words fail, stay. Have the awkward courage to stay, my love, and wait for words or an act or the arrival of an enormous butterfly. Flying from the empty nest. I have discovered that I can fly, waking, missing, embarking, sacrificing. Obviously, we are morons. Send love. It's a challenge not to hit a tree limb. Do right. Meet, receive, rent, return. I've discovered that although I am not a one-winged creature, I can fly. Circle of dance. The smoke where we dance does not fade. I see the roaming circle where we navigated our identities. The dance has hands that reach into us like hunger. Where did you go after we burst against each other? I hear waterfalls, taste saffron, touch elephants. This is how you left me, as night crashes down and the never-heard song begins to play.
That poem comes from Vaughn's latest chapbook, Diptychs and Triptychs, Lipsticks, and, well, we're not going to say that last word in the title because, well, it's not radio-friendly. But we can say it is one of two new books that Vaughn has out. The other is his first full-length book called Attics and Basements. He tells Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce why he enjoys using these devices in his work.
They somehow had an organizational feel that a lot of my other work doesn't. And what I started to realize after Microtones, my first chapbook, was published, is that I had enough of them where I thought I could gather maybe 20 to 30 of them. And also I wanted to generate some new work. So there is new work that goes into diptychs and triptychs. For those listeners who are not writers, diptychs obviously are two or a multi-tiered piece, two layers, A, B, or 1, 2. And then the other aspect is the triptychs, which comes in a threeplex. You know, it's an ABC, like $10,000 pyramid, which opens the book actually is. Or, you know, it's something that just comes in a way that it's told in a three-piece. And the Three Stooges was included, like a take on the Three Stooges is in this collection. So things organically that come to you in threes, I thought, would be fun to, like, kind of vibe off of. The lipsticks and the bleep, boop, that rhymes with triptychs and diptychs, they came sort of as an afterthought for just a longer, catchier title, but there is a little aspect of gender bending. You know, I always say, like, the women are the lipsticks and the men are the, you know, where we're bleeping out. And it's a little bit of a joke, but I like to play with, you know, we've talked about this a little bit previously, is playing to stereotype and playing against stereotype, you know, and that's kind of in the title.
One of the things that I noticed that you do a lot, especially in your triptych stories, is writing about families, which is really interesting because you get kind of that whole Holy Family, Trinity kind of idea in there. What does using this format allow you to do that you maybe otherwise wouldn't be able to explore when you're looking at a family dynamic?
Yeah, you know, it surprised me how much their family material is there. You know, I love my family and I, you know, my parents have passed and I have three siblings, but I never really realized how much family is there until they pointed out to me. I think for me, you know, it really is a genetic structure of our society. It's our culture. And when you look into families, you can get into a thing that can automatically dive into feelings a little bit more easily, more readily. And then also, you know, the things that can kind of go wrong, you know, because so many of us have fragmented or disruptive or unrelenting things about particular issues that come up about family. So it is something that automatically you throw that wrench in of relatability, but you also can kind of go off on these tangents that allow, I think, a little bit more improvisation. We have so clearly define these things, and I like to play with what those definitions are and try to figure out how can I surprise the reader And also surprise myself, because that's the fun part of writing, right? You don't know where you're going to go.
In creating these surprises, though, you have to create these really strong characters. Where a lot of writers might get very confessional, yours are almost an exploration of, you know, what we see around us. How do you balance that as a writer, keeping a certain distance in your writing so that way you can really play?
That's a great question. I think what I do is I start in first draft with making it as personal as possible. You know, what I know, what is organic, what is me. And then I have to build it backward from that. You know, where is the place in this piece where I need a little bit more distance or a little more reprieve as a reader or for the character's sake? You know, how might a character feel as if it's a little bit safer to not go there yet, to not open that door, to not trip down the stairs, you know, whatever, whether it's a physical thing or an emotional thing. I think the other thing is, though, I don't know really until I have a first draft what I can do to make it different. You know, I have to trust that whatever comes out of my pen first is just thrown there. Just as an example, today, there's a crossing guard in Shorewood I see here every day. You know, and oftentimes if I leave at a certain time, I'm stopped by her stop sign and those kids are crossing the street like little ducks, you know. And I got out my notebook really quickly while we were stopped and I just wrote down crossing guard. I was like, this is a woman who I see every single weekday almost, and I have not yet written a poem that's to honor her and honor the fact that our paths cross. You know, this idea that she's out there every day in 30 below weather, you know, you want to up the stakes. And the kids look up into her eyes and she smiles. I just wanted to honor her because she is someone who I see. And, you know, these are the people that I feel deserve the attention in our work. You know, the janitor, the baker, the crossing guard, the person who sweeps the stage at the Olympics after the figure skaters are done at night. The real people, the people in life that we don't look at necessarily.
On the flip side, in your next book, Attics and Basements, you're looking at quite different people. You're looking at the more destructive angle of people. Why did you want to explore these individuals?
Well, Attics and Basements is my first full-length collection, and so it's playing, of course, on the term attics being part of a room in a house, attics upstairs and basements down below, so as above, so below. But attics popped in, and I thought, okay, not only, you know, genetically can I look into my own history of what addiction has played out in my own family or my own genes, but also we are in a culture and in a society that has addiction, I think, in some ways really ignored. I mean, you know, yes, it's honored by those people who have chosen to make some different choices. But by and large, there's a lot of things that people get addicted to in our culture that we don't talk about. And I wanted to find those people. You know, somebody, when I was planning this book, people were giving me all sorts of bizarre ideas. One said, oh, I have a friend who eats toilet paper. Or I have a friend who can't use public bathrooms because da-da-da-da-da. You know, I generated so much interest in addicts that I thought it's got to be a part of the book.
So we've talked about the addicts part, but where do the basements come in this book?
I have a thing about basements. I can't really explain what it is. I am terrified of them. I have been since I was a kid. We had like I think we called it a crawl space in our basement when I was a kid, but it was earth. And I always felt like I could hear things in there and, you know, and then there's the septic system and then there's, you know, like there's all sorts of things that trigger up when you say basement for people automatically. I am drawn to the more bizarre, less mundane, but more bizarre aspects in our culture. And so I think the flip side from basements, which, you know, that brings about dank, dark, mysterious, possibly mystical, possibly, you know, going into the opposite of what a basement might be for some people, you know, a haven.
Were there stories in Attics and Basements that you wrote that made you think, where did this come from? I'm thinking of Gauze, a Medical Dressing, a Scrim. That story is about a basement. It's got a family factor in it. There's a family dynamic. And it's a creepy story.
The main thing about this story is there's a really tender part of it, too. I think this is the one thing when you get into creepy, you can look at it and the characters are like, they're kind of sappy sweet sometimes and they're kind of gentle. And so there's this whole other aspect too of what goes into creepy where you can balance it out. You can flush it out with this side that's like, oh, he's kind of cute or, you know, whatever, that makes it a little bit more palatable.
Now, in addition to carrying on the use of those stylistic devices like diptychs and triptychs in attics and basements, you also write in that style of half prose, half poetry. We still even see that in this full collection. Can you write a full story in that style and really do justice to a beginning, a middle, an end? Or are you really just giving flashes?
I think both. You know, there is a tradition with people who do a little bit more crossover or mixed genre work, people that are sort of in between a genre. You know, the world has us define things as such, poetry, fiction, memoir, essay. We're required to have these things really based on how a book can sell. You know, so yeah, by me mixing up genre or making it unpredictable or non-genre specific, is it a harder sell? Probably. I don't know. But the main thing for me is I use the genres to try to figure out what's the best mouthpiece for a particular piece of work. And I have had suggestions. I am in writing groups where I get feedback on my work still. And in many cases, someone will say, I think this would work better as a story, as a narrative story, or a block of fiction, or paragraphs. You know, or sometimes I have the opposite. I'll take in a story and people say, this could be condensed down and make a better poem. You know, so I write both. I think that there's a market for both, but I think there's also this emergence now of a lot of writers that are playing with crossing over hybrid markets, especially with so many online venues that lend to more experimentation in writing. So,
do you ever go back and forth with a story? Do you ever try writing it in a strictly prose style and then go back and maybe add some of that more poetic treatment to it?
I do. And I would say I do it more that way than the opposite. I rarely start with a poem and think, oh, this should be a story. You know, if something comes out of me as a poem, I kind of feel like that's usually how it stays. That's usually how, you know, the organic structure of it sort of needs to be. There's a poem in Attics and Basements called On the Wings of a Dove. It's for Matthew Shepard. And, you know, that poem, I've changed it. Of course, I've edited it several times. But that I don't think that would be the same if it was a story. We've heard so many stories. There's plays about this incident. So, and actually with this piece, I wanted the dedication to come at the end of it because I wanted you to be able to read the whole thing and not get up front who it was about. But, you know, I usually feel like if a poem comes out of me, bonus question is another one that's in Attics and Basements. I wrote that, you know, years and years ago, the first draft. I like to leave it that way. There's something – in a way, it's kind of honoring that, I think. But having said that, too, you know, there – as a writer, there are multiple – you know, we only have a certain amount of stories to tell. So oftentimes there's shades or shards of different things. You could read something, for instance, in diptychs and triptychs that you feel is a poem that I tell later in a story where you're like, well, that kind of echoes that piece in, you know, the other book, you know. So that's a possibility too.
Now, would you indulge me and read my favorite from Attics and Basements, which is Bonus Question?
Sure. Bonus Question. A late night call-in to the all-night radio station. The DJ is waiting for the answer to the bonus question. When suddenly, at 3:17 in the desolate morning, the phone rings. He picks it up. The woman on the other end says, huskily, for the whole country to hear, "Will you love me?" Sorry, wrong answer. But somewhere, lying in the darkness and staring into pitch black, someone who has never seen her face whispers yes.
Robert Vaughn, thank you so much for coming in and sharing these two books with us.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Robert Vaughn's first full-length collection is Attics and Basements, published by Civil Coping Mechanisms this month. His latest chapbook, with the abbreviated title Diptychs and Triptychs, is published by Deadly Chaps Press. Vaughn will be reading at Boswell Book Company, opening for author Gina Frangello, this Monday evening. He'll also be giving a week-long workshop this July at the Clearing Folk School in Ellison Bay, Wisconsin. Vaughn spoke with Stephanie Lecce. Well, many of us collect things, from pottery to books of matches to model trains. Well, coming up next, we'll meet a Madison man who loves the humble telephone. Stay tuned for our next edition of It's a Material World, coming up next on Lake Effect Weekend on Milwaukee Public Radio.